for the second hour of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name is Bill Cundiff.
Who's our sponsor, Bill?
Our sponsor, who's one of many, is Pape Machinery. And they're our local John Deere Ag and Turf dealer. They're located at 3119 Twin View Boulevard in the city of Shasta Lake. And they can take care of all your tractor needs up there. They have a good supply of John Deere tractors in stock, John Deere mowers, attachments. They got it all. Go up and see them. They do parts and service as well. But go up and see them or give them a call. Their phone number is 530-226-9226.
Hello.
Or catch them on the web at papamachinery.com.
There you have it.
There you are.
All right. We're going to jump right back in it. We're here with Nathan Deshmaker, and we're talking about defending our rural resources is what I called it, just because that's really what it all boils down to. And our country is loaded with resources. And unfortunately, through just policy ensnarements, not necessarily our laws, but the policy that's enacted by the agencies that are supposed to be managing our public land, our resources are either being wasted or just unused or wrecked. In the West, I mean, we have timber resources coming out our ears. At least we did till we burned down 1 million acres a year or more.
Yeah.
So Nathan's working on the policy side, going through all the rules, all those terrific rules that they use against us because we don't know them. That's the bottom line, huh, Nathan? The public just doesn't know the rules.
Cutting out on my end.
Oh, we are? Oh, maybe we better call you again or something because you sound perfect. How is that? Weird? Oh, the fact that he's not saying anything gives me a clue.
I'll go ahead and call him back.
Okie dokie.
Get this all sorted.
Yeah.
Well, one of the things I'd kind of like him to go back to is this policy that they're wanting to reintroduce the grizzly bears into the Washington area. This reminds me of when they reintroduced the wolves, and when they did that, they had a plan to maintain the population
right.
At around 400 animals over a certain area. And at that point, once they reached that level, then they would delist them and then also control their population through special hunts and so forth. Problem is they never went back to that. They let that population just expand and move completely outside the borders of what they had originally planned, and now
because they're wild animals,
yeah, they're wild
animals,
and an
apex predator,
and so you know we can't control that. So they've just basically let that population run wild, and the local cattle ranchers, sheep herders, and so forth have suffered greatly because of that plan, and they're still not really doing a lot to manage that population growth. And I don't think a lot of people realize, but wolves populate like rats. I mean, they take over an area, and if there's food, they're going to keep growing and expanding. I kind of see the same thing happening with grizzlies, only I think it's a little more serious with a grizzly bear. I mean, you open your back door and there's a grizzly standing there. You're not in your back door anymore.
Nobody lives in your house anymore.
No, you're being drug out into the woods and eaten. I mean, just ask the people up in Alaska that live with grizzlies. There's areas you don't go, and you certainly don't go there unless you're armed. And they still lose a lot of people up there because of grizzly bears. And I guess that's going to be okay if they do this and you live in Washington, well, then that's your problem if you can't get along with the grizzlies.
And just like the wolves, though, if you shoot them, good luck. They did that on that show Yellowstone, too. There were wolves that were killing their cattle. And they shot them and realized they were collared, so they were being tracked by Fish and Wildlife. And they were like, uh-oh. Not that they could have known that necessarily from a distance, but They took the collars off and strapped them to wood and floated them down the river, which didn't really work out so good.
No.
We don't know what actually turned out with that yet. But I mean, people are put in really bad situations with all of this, and you're supposed to be compensated if they kill your livestock, but the standard to receive compensation is so high that either you can't meet it or it's...
Exactly. And you know, with the wolves, yeah, they're a dangerous animal. If you're out there in their habitat and they want to attack you, they will. But in most cases, they're as much afraid of you as you are of them.
Well, that's what the environmentalists all said, but that hasn't actually borne out necessarily.
They'll track you and they'll hunt you. But grizzly bears are known to track people and...
Yeah, Nathan, what's the rhetoric up there in the meetings about all this? Are they doing like what they did with us with wolves? Oh, it's no big deal. They won't go after people. It'll be fine. Are they doing that to you too?
Well, you know what's really ironic? So the draft environmental impact statement for this first go around in the North Cascade ecosystem in Washington, they said because we're going to be picking grizzly bears that largely have a herbal diet, they won't be as prone to depredating or attacking people as the greater Yellowstone grizzly bears.
We're going to pick vegetarian grizzly bears. That's terrific.
Yeah, that's literally what they're saying, and they're trying to carry that same reasoning forward in this scoping process. And so, yeah, but the thing is, all of the information, the depredation side of this, or bears, I guess. So I have three sources, and it's funny because U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service also referenced these same authors and books. So three different sources debunk that idea. One is Anderson from 2002 stating that depredation event counts suggest that as more grizzly bears become spatially associated with livestock, they kill livestock at higher levels, which could indicate that bears depredated on livestock opportunistically rather than a few problem bears repeatedly depredating. So he's saying this isn't just a problem bear issue. As bears become more distributed and associated with livestock, and then Wells in 2017 said grizzly bears are opportunistic omnivores. Gunther in 2004 said livestock depredation by grizzly bears in the greater Yellowstone ecosystem from 92 to 2000 has been found to be unrelated to the availability of bear foods. And that conclusion is based on the fact that they're finding depredation and looking around and seeing all these berry bushes, and they're like, this doesn't make sense. The bear ate the cow even though there's a berry bush right there. Hmm. It's like, well, it's because they, and then if they get a taste of meat and protein, that's what they prefer because they're going to build a lot better fat and a lot better everything they need to get through the winter by eating your cattle or fish or meat protein than scrubbing berries off the mountainside.
Yeah, I'm not sure they're going to build a lot of fat there.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's
problematic.
And none of that factors into their process, right?
Well, we insert these are the types of things that I do research and analyze and look in and actually read through. So that's the thing you mentioned earlier, how do people get involved at the local level? If you're more of an academically minded person and you're a researcher, and you're good at researching and going down that path, maybe there's a potential you could do similar work that I do, which is actually reading through those impact statements and look at the reasoning. Because the CEQ regulations for implementing the National Environmental Policy Act says that agencies shall make explicit reference by footnote to the scientific or other sources relied upon for conclusions in the statement. They did not put a single footnote or scientific reference on the statement that these are going to be vegetarian bears in that conclusion. So one of the ways you deal with that in the comment process on an impact statement like that is you call that out and you cite the sources. You do what they're not doing and you put, that's what I call equipping the public record. You analyze their impacts analyses, you identify where they're coming to conclusions without citing the sources, and then you actually do the homework and find out what's really going on and cite the references and sources, and you take them to task on it. Not only did you not cite references, you're actually misleading public opinion because you're ignoring peer review literature on the same subject.
So in their plan to reintroduce, have you seen the numbers? How many bears are they talking about reintroducing into this area?
Well, it would be an incremental process over time. The goal, the number they throw out is 200 to get eventually to 200 bears in the North Cascades. So here's another thing so in Montana, what's happened is agencies, Fish and Wildlife Service, state and federal departments have projected through modeling population growth and dispersion of bears outside of the region of influence. Those models, and then they use those predictive methodologies to go forward with no action on mitigating the bear. And those predictive methodologies, after we observed and have the empirical data of population increase and dispersion in the Northern Continental Divide ecosystem, were 25% to 40% off. They were predicting this much population increase and this much dispersion. They dispersed 20% to 40%. They populated and dispersed 20% to 40% more than what they were predicting in their predictive methodologies. And like I said, they use those predictions as an excuse not to mitigate the dispersion of the bear. And those predictions have shown come to be flawed. They don't meet the rigor and the standards that's required for agencies and the science they use to make those types of determinations.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another area you could call them out is, and we have that data. They're speculating and using these predictive methodologies. We're looking at the data that's available in Montana because we have 1,000 bears over 1,000 bears in the Northern Continental Divide ecosystem and over 800 in the Greater Yellowstone. A lot of grizzly bears.
Wow.
And they're dispersing way outside the original region of influence.
Mm-hmm. Now, how will this affect the native black bear population? Are they going to coexist, or is this going to drive the black bears further out into populated areas?
You know, I don't know a direct answer to that other than to say, like in Washington, in the Northern Cascades, they do have a black bear population there, and they already have some issues just even dealing with the black bears, but I assume that they would coexist to some extent, but there's potential problems there.
Mm-hmm.
I would say I haven't looked into that personally of the interrelationship between black bears and grizzlies, though.
Yeah, well, I know they have a fairly substantial black bear population in this area. They've outlawed hunting with dogs, so you know that drives the numbers up. And I'm curious to see once they introduce the grizzlies, what that population is going to do in Washington. With the wolves, they introduced them in Oregon, and it wasn't even a year later they were already in California. So I'm sure they're going to migrate down the West Coast, and we'll have. Because they're going to go where the food is, and there's plenty of food in Washington and Oregon and Northern California, you know, with the deer populations and so forth. I guess I'm really shocked that they would think that in any way that's a good idea.
And that they can control it.
And they can control it, exactly.
That's the bigger one.
Yeah.
So what's happening so Montana's petitioned to delist the bear. One of the main arguments the state is making is that as long as that animal remains threatened on the endangered species list, the state's police powers are tied behind their back. Our state official. Montana has had a long history of grizzly bears. We have the capacity at the state level, through hunting and all sorts of other mechanisms, to mitigate the bear and protect life, limb, and property in the state of Montana. But as long as that bear stays listed and threatened on the Endangered Species Act, those police powers are essentially extremely limited. So for that reason, because the grizzly bear, the scientific name for it is the Ursus arctis or whatever, it is stable in population and increasing across its whole Arctic range. Tens of thousands of them are in existence. It is a species of least concern in the international scientific community. So ultimately, reluctance or delays in delisting a recovered species such as the grizzly bear significantly limits a state's ability to protect life, limb, or property. So for U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to not to address the grizzly delisting issue while at the same time seeking to introduce a non-essential experimental population into an extirpated region constitutes, in my opinion, an intrusion into the police powers reserved by the federal and state constitutions to state and local governments.
Absolutely.
So we have federalism implicated. These are structural issues. This is not just an issue of a department putting a bear out there and not managing it. We have federalism implications in these processes. The bear under the ESA is recovered. Aurelia Skipwith, in her Senate confirmation to Fish Wildlife Service 2 years ago, said that to the senator out of Wyoming, that the gray wolf and the grizzly bear are functionally recovered for the purposes of the ESA. So ultimately, with them going forward with this and trying to bring bears into the NCE and Washington State while ignoring these other state petitions is a inappropriate primacy by executive agencies that's intruding into the locally reserved police powers of those states and state and local governments to protect their property rights interests and the constituents that live within their jurisdictions.
Right.
Amen.
Yeah, no, I agree.
And we're seeing that with a bunch of other things, and it's always a nefarious purpose, like getting rid of livestock, that sort of thing. We have to take a really quick break. We're going to come right back since Nathan's on a roll, coming back quick. You're listening to We the People. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Keep a 45 by your bed. That'll help you sleep.
You can work with Nathan and keep the federal government out of your house. It is scary for people, though. I mean, all of this, because it seems so completely overwhelming and out of control.
Yeah.
Yeah, sorry.
Well, it comes back to, like I said earlier, you have to start from the principles. And what we ended on coming into that break was the principle. And it's called federalism. And it's called the separation of powers. Article 1, legislative. Article 2, executive. And Article 3, you have the judiciary. And then Article 4 of the Constitution is the guarantee to the states a republican form of government. And then latter amendment with the 10th and 9th Amendment of the U.S. Constitution is the reservation of powers. See, these agencies and state departments that we're working with, they have enumerated powers. State and local governments have unenumerated powers. there is a vast amount of residual power aggregated at the local level of government. So back to the grizzly bear issue is you have to deal with this procedurally. We're not going to win on these issues by trying to fight all the science and all this different stuff. We need to include the science. We need to understand the data that's there and call it out when we can. But so just one quick thing back to the federalism. So there's an executive order still on the books. I believe it was a Reagan-era executive order, or maybe it was actually even Clinton might even sign this one. But it's an executive order dealing with federalism implications. That order says that that the order was issued in order to ensure that the principles of federalism established by the framers guide the executive departments and agencies in the formulation and implementation of policies and to further the policies of the Unfunded Mandates Reform Act, and that federalism is rooted in the belief that issues that are not national in scope or significance are most appropriately addressed by the level of government closest to the people, end quote. Very clear.
Yeah.
Who is that? That's the county officials that are elected in that local jurisdiction. That's your state magistrates. That's where these things should be addressed. But we have our federal counterparts entering into a domain that historically, under our system of government, has been left to state prerogatives. That's where we are.
Well, I think
not just on the grizzly bear.
No, sure. but I think a lot of that stems from counties accepting and being afraid of losing federal funding on a lot of other things, and I think that's the leverage they have. Is, you know, you go along with us on this, or we're going to pull your funding on that, and it's just gotten so out of hand at this point. I think this whole thing with the feds coming in and funding local programs, yeah, it benefits
the land of grants.
Yeah, it just leaves us beholden to the federal government. And now everybody's afraid to lose what little money they have, which is a bad position to be in.
Yeah. Well, we're getting grants from the same agencies, departments, and NGOs that are systematically destroying the industries that provide our tax base.
I agree.
That's what's happening in Montana. Our coal industry has been not destroyed, but hamstrung. And guess what? Our local conservation districts traditionally have been forever funded by the royalties from coal mining.
Mm-hmm.
And look at that. We're going to allow access and utilization of an important resource for the energy of this state and the rest of the nation and the world, because we export a lot of coal out of Montana. We're not burning it here, but we're shipping it to Japan and China right now by the train load. And last I checked, we live in the same atmosphere. So there's a big problem with outsourcing. We're not stopping the industries. We're outsourcing them to other countries. And like I said, there's tax implications to this. We've hamstrung the funding for our local conservation districts. So therefore, exactly, what are our conservation districts now? Basically units of local government that are 100% dependent. Some of our districts have to basically show a negative on the balance sheet at the end of the year to get the administrative grants we need just to carry forward baseline administrative costs to keep the district even in an office in the county.
Right.
That's where we are. But instead of us being like, hey, we need to actually bring back our coal industry and have these tax bases, we're more worried about going to the legislature to get all the marijuana money that's available now to fund our conservation districts.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's where we are in Montana, and not just Montana. I'm sure other states are facing the same things. But when these industries go, we're not only losing the material resource that provides cheap, affordable products for us as the people of this nation, we're also losing the taxable revenue that those industries generate that fund our local governments.
Well, they've done the same thing in mm-hmm. Northern California with the timber industry. The timber receipts funded our schools and roads and everything else, and they've pretty much, I mean, we still have logging in California, but not to the scale that it was. I mean, we had mills in all these Northern California towns, and very few mills left.
Yeah, we're importing our lumber from Canada.
Yeah, we import our lumber, and
so not many that we're not using it.
Yeah, and so many of these schools now, they don't get those timber receipts. They don't have the money to operate like they used to, and so again, like you said, they're just totally dependent on these federal funds to keep going, and that's where they've got these counties hamstrung. We've got to take the control back and reopen some of these industries that aren't damaging the ecology and the environment like they want everybody to believe. But man, they've done a great job of shutting it down.
Yeah. Well, in the, you know, you had the war on coal with Obama administration. Now we have the third administration and Biden coming forward from that agenda that's all out assault on our oil and gas industries. You know, what the commercial break, that's what one of the things that was said is, I mean, we've lessened our oil reserves to the level it hasn't been since the 80s. And now we're buying, just like you said, we're buying timber from Canada. Well, we're buying a bunch of oil and gas now from other countries, sometimes hostile and communist-based systems of government, mm-hmm. who have unregulated industries that are developing those resources, and we're buying that to replenish our reserves. I mean, it's an absolute... It's really sad is what it is, being an American citizen who cares about our heritage and the blood, sweat, and tears that our forefathers went through to guarantee to us a Republican form of government, which basically take away all the legalese out of it. That means there's a separation of powers within government to protect you, the individual person. That's what it boils down to. And when we have government in a position that it can just come in through the executive branch and impact vast sectors of economic activity, which is what happens when you attack the oil and gas industry and you withdraw finance from those industries, which is what they're doing. There is an energy crisis is an everything crisis. The problem is the net zero economists over in, you know, at the UN and even in our country and high levels of government, they view energy as just another input into the economic system. But in reality, energy is actually the hub from which all other economic transactions come in and out of. So they're philosophically, from an economic perspective, standing on a false understanding of how things function in the modern economic framework. And they're tampering with the hub that gives the foundational basis. Energy is everything in relationship to getting cheap, affordable, and reliable and sustainable products to the people. And we're not talking about just a smartphone that you don't necessarily need. I'm talking about the food you put in your refrigerator and the lights you turn
on. Talking about civilization as a whole.
And I was just going to say, that was the turning point in civilization. That's when things really sped up, was when we... found a way to have oil and gas and, you know, heat our homes without spending all day cutting wood.
Expensive energy, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, where'd oil come from before that?
Mm-hmm.
Whales.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's the thing, is it was an environmental success, too. I mean, the automobile actually cleaned up our cities. Respiratory disease and rates in our cities before the automobile were way out the roof. I mean, New York had, 50,000 horses and carriages in that city walking around, carrying people around and pooping and peeing all day long in the street. It wasn't a
clean, pristine
environment.
You know, I mean, the legendary pictures of London where you basically couldn't see anybody. We even made...
All the wood burning. Exactly.
And the coal. I mean, Mary Poppins. Right? We even made children's movies about it.
That's what they want to go back to for some reason.
I don't even know if they want to go back to anything in particular. this is just totally an opinion thing, but I'm curious. Do you think they actually have a goal of like a destination in mind, or do you think it's just all about saying no and crushing forward progress? Like, do you think they have a plan?
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's a plan, but it's, like I said, their plan's based on a false philosophical foundation at the get-go. They're not intentionally, these people, I don't think, understand the implications. And this is, if you study economics, you understand this. The root of all of our troubles lies in the fallacy that the best way of ordering economic affairs is to place the responsibility for all crucial decisions in the hands of the state. And this error, driven to its logical conclusion, as it is now being driven by those who have been put into power, can bring upon us untold miseries and humiliations of which the past couple of years have given us a foretaste. The central planners, they have an economic plan, and that's what the climate policy agenda is all about. Climate policy and the climate change agenda is nothing more than the mechanism to get the free economies of the West to sell their birthright for a pot of stew. It's a mechanism for it's the age-old gold for a centrally planned economy. And it's not new. It's been something that we've always, as a free people, had to throw off. And that's part of the tribal way of thinking and doing things. So that's why it attacks individualism. That's why it attacks the institution of the home and the family. Because the home and the family is a support system for who? The individual. They want to sever the natural laws and support systems to individual people to create a dependency on the state. So that's the plan. Whether the implications that brings about is what they're not taking into consideration, which is suffering and a violation of the fundamental rights of individual people that is laid out in the Declaration of Independence.
Yeah, and that never ends well. You know, when you do that to a population and you start to crush people down, they might be somewhat compliant at the beginning, but they don't stay that way. I don't know. I really think that they fundamentally misunderstand their own place in all this. They think somehow everybody's just going to roll over and let them, be the boss of them, as we used to say when we were kids. And I don't think that's actually going to happen. That's going to be. I believe that'll be surprising for a lot of these.
You always wonder, how bad does it have to get before people say enough's enough? And I think we're starting to see a little bit of that now. But I think it's going to get a whole lot worse before it gets better.
I think they're going to have to figure it out. You already see it, like with the agencies, like here, they want to have their meetings down in Sacramento, which is, 2.5 hours from the city that we're currently in, which is 1.5 hours from the city up north where our friend Debbie Bacigalupi is, and where, like, all the Wolf meetings and stuff, they were having them in Sacramento. Well, it wasn't going to affect Sacramento. It was going to affect people up there. So they just...
Yep.
They move it so that they don't actually have to face the people who live there. But those folks who are doing a lot of jobs similar to yours, running cattle ranches and things, they've got to take time to drive to some far-reaching place to sit in a room and listen to a bunch of nutty talk about how, wolves will be scared away if you put little rags on your fence. And they neglected to note that you're not fencing an acre. I mean, this is thousands of acres. We've got to take one more quick break, and then we'll come back with Nathan up to the top of the hour. You're listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
You are faithful, faithful. I'm leaving doubt and sorrow in the distance. I'm gonna trust and cast my fears aside. My life's a work that I know you'll finish. I know I'm gonna be all right. Shelter where the
them, then you gotta teach them about freedom. You gotta win it, gotta put yourself smack dab in it.
Hey. Way back in the 70s, we even knew that.
Yeah, they knew it was coming.
They wrote music for us for the future. God bless them. It's very helpful. But we thought we'd play some songs from the Wayback Machine since you're younger than we are. Nathan, I know we have successfully burned through almost 2 hours of your day, but in our last, 10, 12 minutes or whatever, what else do people need to know? I mean, things that they probably aren't hearing about, perhaps, that you guys are working on that they ought to wise up to.
Well, maybe I'll do two things.
All right.
We got about, 10, 15 minutes or so.
Yeah.
I'm going to circle back and touch on Gorsuch again and what's happening in the courts.
Okay.
I want to read a couple things directly from him that ties in well to our conversation. And then we can maybe shift and just summarize with local home rule and the importance of... it's got to start on the ground and where you are. So with that, let me just read just a quick, not much here, just a, four sentences or something. And this is out of that book, Republic If You Can Keep It, Neil Gorsuch. Actually, I said 2018, published 2019. He says, if an agency can enact a new rule of general applicability affecting huge swaths of the national economy one day and reverse itself the next, you might be forgiven for asking, where's the substantial guidance in that? And if an agency can interpret the scope of its statutory jurisdiction one way, one day, and in reverse itself the next, you might well wonder, where are the promised, clearly delineated boundaries of agency authority? Add to this the fact that today many administrative agencies wield vast powers and are overseen by political appointees, and you have a pretty potent mix. Under any conception of our separation of powers, I would have thought powerful and centralized authorities, like today's administrative agencies, would have warranted less deference from other branches, not more. It is an arrangement, too, that seems pretty hard to square with the Constitution of the Founders' design, and as Justice Felix Frankfurter once observed, quote, the assertion of dangerous power does not come in a day, it does come, however slowly, from the generative force of unchecked disregard of the restrictions imposed by the Constitution, end quote.
Boy, that's powerful.
Sitting Supreme Court Justice.
Yeah.
Wrote that and published it.
Yeah.
You know what he's saying?
Yeah.
Give us a case.
Uh-huh. Yeah, exactly.
Does that not resonate with the little tiny chip we chipped off the block of the issue within the administrative state of our day? I mean, in different words, I just read that directly from a sitting Supreme Court justice from a publication 2-3 years ago. And the case law out there is saying the same thing. In the West Virginia versus EPA case, Gorsuch wrote a whole concurrence to that on the major questions. And he cited a case law, and I can't wait to use it. And it says, neither can agencies hide elephants in mouse holes. That is so Gorsuch cited that case in this concurrence. I was like, man, I never saw that one before. That is a good one.
That is.
So that's not just a book he published. These citations, you read Gorsuch, if you haven't read it, I encourage you to get that West Virginia versus EPA case and read through the concurrence that Gorsuch put forward on that. It is very powerful, and they're pushing those separation of powers principles that as part and parcel of what I was talking about from, because it ties into what we do from the local side of things, because those separation of powers, where the power should be, the local home rule power, just like Madison said, the Constitution is parchment. The only thing that gives it any power is a thorough knowledge of the people. And Neil Gorsuch said in this book that one of the main reasons he wrote this book was to get across the vital responsibility of each American, each one of you, to keep our republic strong.
Yeah, and I think that's the root of the whole problem right there, is as these agencies step up and make rules, not laws, and then we bend and abide by their rules, this is what we get. And until people are tired of being stepped on, I think they're going to continue, because they know they can. And that's why I think it's going to get a lot worse before it gets better, because they're kind of on a roll right now where they can pretty much do whatever they want, particularly with this administration. I mean, look at our border. I mean, it's completely out of control, and it's going to get a lot worse when Title 42 is abandoned. And what then? I mean, people have got to realize that we're going down a bad road right now, and it has the potential of becoming much, much worse. So I don't know.
Well, the only thing necessary for evil to triumph is when good men do nothing. And so I guess our responsibility is to do what we can to, and that's, you know, even being on a ranch and doing the work we do on a day-to-day basis. Like, my stepfather passed away 8 years ago, and which is one of the reasons I got thrusted onto the ranch. And, you know, I've always had to come down to the end of the day with my wife and say the only way to guarantee what God has for us tomorrow is to do what he's called us to do today. That's our duty. That's our responsibility. And I'm just appealing people back to our heritage, to our oaths of office, because the Marxists, if you study Marxism and communism and their whole philosophy and their journals on how they, you know, Antonio Gramsci's prison diaries, where he talks about how the Judeo-Christian principles are so entrenched in Western civilization that the only way that we can really dismantle Western civilization is by taking a long march through the institutions to sever the people from their heritage. So if the communists know this, and they're doing it, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
So what is our response to that? Stay connected to our heritage. And that's why even in the Old Testament, God was so adamant about that with Israel, is teach these things to your kids and their kids. Remind them of how God has delivered you through the wilderness and brought you to a land that you had not known. You know, keep these things instilled. And, you know, 3-4 generations down the road, what were they doing? They were bringing the idols of Baal into the temple and worshiping the gods facing to the east. And what happens is then you add God's judgment on top of the communist approach to dismantle and sever a people from their heritage. So we need to, and I'm coming to the conclusion that the most important thing that we can do individually is first understand our heritage, understand where we come from as a people, and that establishes principles that you live by in all of life. And if you're like me and you're into policy stuff and you're able to work in that field, you take those principles and you apply them there.
Mm-hmm. You know, and I think one of the problems we're facing today is more and more people don't have those principles. They're not from here. They weren't raised with those principles. And slowly things are being diluted. But I truly believe there's still more people out there that believe in those principles, and I think they just need to wake up and see what's happening here, because we're being infiltrated with these communist ideas And even our young people are looking at it going, well, it can't really be that bad. I mean, what are their parents teaching them that they would be? And it's not just the parents. It's our academia is teaching them that this is the way to go, that, you know, the government has all the answers and they'll take care of you. And it's just...
That's always worked out well throughout history.
Oh, it really has.
You know, when the government takes care of you.
Yeah, and you hear them say, oh, well, you know, they're good ideas. We just need to do them differently. We can do it better. It never works that way. I mean, history's taught us it doesn't work that way. Once they get power, they pretty much wield it, and then you're in a really hard place to fight it. So I don't know. I think it's going to start with the young people to really understand our history, understand where we come from, and then understand where these other countries have fought these same battles with communism and socialism, and they always end up the same.
Yeah, it never.
Well,
ends well.
What one note on that really quick is another thing I've been pondering recently is, you know, when God starts with a people, He starts with a home and a family. Mm-hmm. You know, He doesn't go to some righteous, city or some righteous state government or some righteous body of government out there. Started with a home and a family in His original creation, and even when He started, when He looked upon the earth and saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and it grieved Him in His heart that He even made man on the earth, and then Noah and his family found favor in the eyes of the Lord. God works through individual people and homes and families. That's where it starts.
Mm-hmm.
It starts in our homes, starts in our families. We need to. Thomas Hobbes said, "Justice is the keeping of covenants; injustice is the breaking of covenants." And that starts in our homes, to our communities, and then our civic responsibilities. And if we just keep covenant, problem is we're breaking covenant across the board in our society.
Right. Oh yeah, they've played that long game for a long, long time now, breaking up families and being more and more dependent, and you know, getting people.
Well, regardless of your age, your family layout, or any of those things, you have to be involved in your community. And if you have people who are fighting and you don't have time to do it, help them. Help them either by showing up at the meetings, fund their efforts, and at the very least, cheer them on. Because that's the only way that we keep everybody in the fight. Nathan, thank you so much. We've got to escape before we get cut off at the pass, but I posted all your info along with the Gorsuch opinion is on the website at
wethepeopleradio.us.
The armies of the Lord picked up and dusted off their swords, vowed to set the captive free and not let Satan have one more. What if the church, for heaven's sake, finally stepped up to the plate? Stand upon God's promise and storm hell's rusty gates. What if His people prayed? And those who bear His name would only seek His face, yeah, and turn from their own way. And what would happen if we prayed for those raised up to lead the way? Then maybe kids in school could pray and unborn children see light of day. What if the light that we've